Welcome to the Work Smart Club podcast, hosted by Dr. Cynthia Howard, executive coach and Lean Sigma Black Belt, and brought to you by Work Smart Consulting. Inside of you is the power to transform your world. You just have to unleash your potential. Get ready for strategies you can use right now. Leadership leverage you need.
Thinking outside the box is more than a cliche. I did a podcast, episode 8, that explored the science of creativity and mapped out steps to increase your personal creativity. In this talk, I'm going to take you through what I call the Innovation Lab, which is a process you can use with your team to brilliantly solve problems and engage people. In this podcast, I'm also going to introduce lean thinking, which is foundational to learning to think differently. I'll give you a step-by-step so you can set up your own innovation lab, which is a proven process that I've used to get teams to think differently about their work. I started the innovation labs a few years ago, recognizing there's very little time for training, for simulations, talking about concepts and principles. Distraction is competing for everybody's attention, and there are constantly demands placed on people. So taking the time out for training just isn't practical anymore. But I can understand the need to explore principles and get those concepts in. And when you look at how adults learn, it's very much a hands-on process. If anybody ever remembered shop class way back when, where you got to use all the different tools, the variety of different saws, all the different mechanics, you understood how to use those tools by working on a project and creating something. And that's what the Innovation Lab is. You're going to learn about the tools that are used in Lean Six Sigma and how to change your mindset by engaging in problem solving. And the step-by-step process really does work. I've seen it happen over and over again with my clients. So first, you need to have a problem to solve. And there's really no shortage of problems. The real challenge comes in with choosing the right problem. I've seen so many brilliant solutions that failed because they weren't working on the right problem. So it was the right solution, the wrong problem. So do you have a system that handles problem solving? Do you have a way to catalog those problems? How do you handle issues that people present to you at work? Do you keep a list somewhere, or do they just fall along the roadside because there's something else that comes along so quickly that it gets forgotten? Is everyone overwhelmed? One example that I'm going to be talking about is a company that I worked with who was handling temporary workers and providing the employers that called in with staff. They had a large volume of calls coming in from employers who needed people, but they couldn't process the right employee for the job, so their complaints were piling up, and it was obvious their brand was taking a hit, and ultimately their volume was going to go down if something didn't get done soon. So I spoke with the regional director, and his response was, quote, "No one had the capacity or the bandwidth," unquote. So obviously people were overwhelmed with their workload. But once we did a little exploration, I could tell that they really didn't have any systems in place to handle the calls, to create a queue, if you will, for onboarding people, evaluating employees, and then placing them, and then evaluating that process to see how it was going. So they were just trying to hire people, get them placed without going through any type of process, and it was causing some problems. So in this situation, the question really is, how do we increase their capacity, but also how do we build in systems so that they can increase their quality, increase the value they give to their customers, and grow their business without being overwhelmed? They needed systems. So in this case, we actually decided to set up 3 different innovation labs to look at various issues and then come together with a comprehensive plan at the end. And one of the reasons I chose to do it this way is because I wanted to be able to teach as many people as possible how to use this system. Because given the volume of business that was coming in, the accelerated pace, there were a lot of people that needed to have these skills. And I thought having three different labs running simultaneously would be a way to also provide that background and that training with people. And we were able to get some support. So while some key people were off doing the innovation lab, they were still able to provide people at the phones doing the job of hiring, placing, and training their temporary employees. So let's use this example to walk through how to set up an innovation lab. So we had three different labs. We're going to take a look at the one that was on processing candidates, because the problem that was coming up was the complaints from employers was increasing, and people that were being placed in jobs were also complaining that they weren't really in the right job. So in the words of the director, there was a bandwidth problem, and there were a lot of bottlenecks in the process of recruiting, hiring, training, placing, and then evaluating the whole process. So as the leader, the very first thing you want to do is identify the right problem. And in this case, we're going to take a look at not processing the right candidates in a timely fashion to meet the demands of the employer. One of the other labs was taking a look at identifying the right person for the job. So there are different issues in this situation, and we're going to take a look at how to process the right candidates in a timely fashion to meet the demands of the employer. So the next stage of the process is to identify the current state and then the future state. So when you're taking a look at what's happening at the moment, use quantifiable terms so you can clearly identify progress. So in this case, the regional manager said people didn't have bandwidth. Employers were complaining, saying the wrong person was being sent for their request. So with coaching, the leader defined the current state as 50% of the candidates placed lacked three of the main skills requested by the employer. So they were able to figure this out by taking a look at the last month's worth of placements, and this is what they discovered. So that's pretty clear. Anybody that was looking at that would understand what the problem is. And that's much easier to work with than the HR manager who said most of our hires didn't please the customer. And while that's a true statement, it doesn't really give us anywhere to go because we don't know what the baseline is. So you want to be measurable so everybody recognizes progress. So next, as the leader, you want to identify what is your desired outcome? What is the future state that you want? And as the leader, you're the one defining this. I've seen leaders put this out to their group, and that's not really where that should be. You need to set the standard and set the tone. They might tweak it a little bit, but you need to set the standard. And here is where many managers do not set a high enough standard. Now, the regional director had already presented that he felt people were overwhelmed and didn't have the bandwidth. So the instinct may be to set the standard low so as not to overwhelm people. And in his words, he didn't want to quote unquote pressure people to do more. Yet the truth is people, when they go to work, they want to do a good job and they want to actually be challenged. Bored people flatten out, turn off their mind, and go through the motions. So while you don't want to quote unquote pressure people, you do want to help people stay focused so that they can achieve their goals. So the problem with the director is he didn't really have a vision of what was possible because they didn't have systems in place and he couldn't really communicate to people what was expected of them. So it was always work harder, do more, do your best, and everybody just ultimately threw up their hands. So when you're defining future state, you want to think big. Small gains are not motivating. So if you're thinking, oh, we just want a 10% increase, a 20% increase, that's not really going to motivate people. Plus, it sends a message to your team that you don't think they're capable of anything else. And people will give up if they don't feel like they're appreciated. So future state, you really do want to think in terms of perfect. So hear me out. And this is the foundation behind Lean Six Sigma. If you think about what sigmas mean, they represent a standard deviation from the mean. And with each standard deviation from the mean, you're talking lives that could be saved, millions of dollars that are lost, opportunities that are wasted. So the closer you get to perfection, and Six Sigma is determined to be a really good level because it's pretty close to perfection. The understanding is this doesn't happen overnight and by snapping your fingers, but it happens with a mindset of continual improvement. So perfection is sought after and worked toward in a continuous improvement process, not by pressuring people to work extra, come in early, stay late. That's really not going to get you anywhere, but by setting up processes so that you can evaluate how you're doing, you can define what it is you need to be doing, and then make changes along the way. So in our example, the future state is 100% of our placements match the client's needs and result in a high level of satisfaction. Now that is something people can get behind. Because with that, you are inspiring people to be their very best so your department, your company can be the best and you can satisfy your customers. So keep in mind that unless you have a high standard, people are going to compromise and just do the basic minimum. If you set it high, they also are going to show up and give you their best. So let's go to the next step of the lab. Here's where you want to pull the team together. And these teams need to be small, anywhere from 3 members. It can be as high as 9 members, but 5 is the sweet spot. You want a small working group. This is not a think tank where everybody pontificates about what they think the issues are. This is a working group within which you are going to solve some issues. So the members of the team need to have intimate knowledge of the problem. And we're not talking about hiring experts. We're talking about people who work on the front line of the problem, who understand it, because these are the processes that you want to change. You also want to take a look at what are their attitudes. While you don't want to bring in the most negative, resistant person, you do want to bring in somebody who may not have been satisfied with how things have been going, but who still maintains an open mind and an eagerness to find a solution. So include people that might have opposing views as long as their mind is open, and make sure that people commit to the process, that they're not going to compromise it. They are going to follow it step by step, and they are going to stick it through so that you can have that continuity in your team. You want to make sure that the discussion stays open and you don't have people in there who are trying to go for a quick win and always want to get their way. So once you have the group, now the third step is to actually set up the 100-day roadmap. Working off of a 100-day timeline, I think, is ideal because, number one, you can work in 10-day increments. When people tend to use a month, 30 days, and they use their calendar as a way to schedule out their process, it's not enough because you can't wait 30 days to review and revise. So if you have a 100-day timeline, 100 days is long enough to do some research, explore some processes, and put something in place, but short enough that you're not wasting time if you happen to go down the wrong path. So the 100 days is where you're going to map out when the meetings are going to be, when the milestones are due, and what is required. So this happens in the very first meeting. So once you have your team, you've decided to use a 100-day roadmap, you have the start date, which is the first date of your meeting, and then you have the 100-day endpoint. So in that first meeting, which is generally 3 to 4 hours long. So I know that sounds like a big chunk of time, but this is where the foundation gets laid. It's extremely important. This is where you set up the team charter. It's where you set up the project charter, where you make a lot of decisions about how things are going to flow along with setting up the timeline. So you're going to need that time. So you do want to be able to have coverage for the daily responsibilities. And in this case, they were able to find individuals that could cover for those people that were on the team. So the phones could still get answered and some of the processing could still happen. So in this meeting, you set up the basic terms of engagement. And this is the project charter or the team charter. And I like having these charters because when you spell all of this out, you don't have to do it later. So for example, you identify what are the roles and responsibilities. Who is going to do what? When are those things going to be due? What happens if someone doesn't do it? For example, if you set someone up as the scribe and they're responsible for either taking the notes or sending out the minutes of the meeting and they don't do that, they quote unquote forgot, or they just simply don't do it, how are you going to handle that? Because you want to avoid that back and forth of, why didn't you send out the meetings? I don't know, I forgot. And then you get into conflict and the whole project can fall apart. So you want to set up ahead of time what happens when that doesn't occur. And there's a lot of creative things that you can do, but this is not the talk to go into that. So you're going to spell out the terms of engagement, so to speak, along with what the project scope is, what the deliverables are going to be, so that you can avoid any mission creep or any scope creep, so to speak. You're going to be exploring the problem and building a case around it. So you're going to take a look at what are the issues that are being created as a result of this problem? What are the threats, the opportunities? So you may do a SWOT. You may be using 5 whys. You'll probably be using brainstorming, possibly the value stream map. So these are all tools in the problem solving process that are really helpful so that you can understand what's going on. Because the last thing you want to do is rely on assumptions or stereotypes or conclusions. You want to explore and you want to have data. So in our case, the future state is mapped out as 100% of placements are going to be matched with the employers, resulting in high satisfaction. So that gets written on your project charter. That is the goal. And you want to place that somewhere around so that people actually see it. So the one thing that you're going to want to do is define what does it mean to have high level satisfaction. So maybe you've studied that. Maybe you have some customer satisfaction surveys. You may even want to do your own phone survey. Or if you're close enough, you want to stop by, make an appointment with a customer and just talk about what are the things that really matter to them. You may find out that certain skills don't matter as much as attitude or being punctual or something else. So once you collect all that information, it's going to be very useful to you. But because of what I said about mission creep, you can hold on to this and put this project on the backlog. For example, evaluating customer success, that can be something separate because to go down that path may take you off of your main goal, which is placing 100% of your candidates with employers so that they're satisfied. But what I'm getting at is that you want to define all the variables in your equation. You don't want to jump to conclusions. You don't want to come up with the definition, which is why you don't want quote unquote experts on the committee. You want workers on the committee because you want to be able to understand the process. So in the process of building the case around the problem, you're going to be exploring what the cost is of the problem, what the cost is of not fixing the problem, and what happens if it doesn't get solved. So as you set up your report, and we can talk about what that looks like, there's a tool in Lean Sigma called the A3, which I spell out in detail in the Work Smart Club. It's a one-page report that actually provides all this great information so that people can just glean very quickly what it is you're working on and where you're going. And each milestone, you set up a new version of that report so that you update it. And at the end, you still end up with one page, and it's easy to look at and easy to review. So you wrap up this meeting with a day and time for the next meeting, along with the deliverables, and who is accountable for what. It's always important to identify the owner of the issue. Without an owner, it doesn't get done. And in the team charter, you've already identified roles and responsibilities. You've identified what happens when someone doesn't fulfill that responsibility. And when I work with teams, this is one of the areas that tends to create the biggest source of conflict, which ultimately destroys momentum. Conflict by itself is not the problem, but when you have conflict around these big issues, once you're deep into the issue, then it is a problem. So in the beginning, you want to solve the question of who is doing what, who is sending out the emails, who's going to be the scribe, who's the researcher, who's compiling the data, who might be creating the reports, who's going to be doing the interviews for the customers or the potential candidates. So all of that is going to be determined up front. So then when everybody ends this meeting, they know what they have to do, when they have to do it, and you can stay on track. So if you want to learn more about holding an innovation lab and using this 100-day timeline, check out the WorkSmartClubNetwork.com. It's our online resource center. You can get the details there, WorkSmartClubNetwork.com. Join us, get access to this tool along with many others. And if you want to download a guide, you can go to the main website, WorkSmartThinkDifferent.com/resources, and you have several things that you can download there. But the point is you want to define ahead of time everything that you're doing, set up a beginning, middle, and end, use a 100-day timeline because it can be divided into 10-day increments, and have an expectation of success. That is partly what drives an innovation lab, is you bring people together who are close to the problem, who want to find a solution to the problem, and who have intimate knowledge of it. It's very empowering to give the problem to those people who are in charge of it, rather than having the C-suite make a lot of decisions and then impose it on people. So I love using this process. Let me know how you intend to use it. And if you have any questions and you want to schedule a strategy session, please do that, because we can talk through your challenge and talk about how I might be able to help you solve that. But in the meantime, stay energized.
Thank you for tuning in to the Work Smart Club podcast. We love our listeners and want to hear from you. Please join us at WorkSmartClubNetwork.com. Stay connected and subscribe to our show so you never miss any of the content. Leaving us a positive review lets everyone know we add value. We thank you for it.